Greetings, everyone. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are beginning our March 28th, 2019 World Peace Diet Circle call. Thank you all for joining us. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm not using my little earpiece like I usually do. Maybe I will. If you notice that it's much worse or much better, just let me know. Maybe send an email to me, willtuttle@earthlink.net. I'm curious. I can't really tell. I think it's about the same. There we go. And now I have the, I'm just a little easier with this earpiece, perhaps. Okay, so here we are. Gosh, it's been a one-week delay. I'm sorry about that, everyone. We had a really busy schedule last couple of weeks in Texas, and every single minute, it seemed like, was booked with lectures and presentations promoting veganism in the great Lone Star State there with some wonderful people. So we're back in our rhythm a little bit here. We're in Southern California in Palm Springs, just outside of Palm Springs, in our rolling home. And we have one more little flurry of events coming up this weekend where we'll be speaking in Southern California around the L.A., Los Angeles area, and then heading back home for some events in Northern California. It's really great. The people in Santa Rosa, where we live, near where we live, it's about an hour away, are doing a big homecoming celebration, and they would like us to do a lecture and dinner at this local vegan restaurant called Gaia's Garden and show slides from the past year when we were in Eastern Europe and here. We've been busy in the Caribbean and doing a Southwest lecture tour also in the last couple of months, so it's been really wonderful, and it's nice to know that when we go back, there are vegans that are interested in finding out more about how the movement is going in other countries. And there's so much to talk about, really. It's fantastic. So welcome, everyone. And this is a wonderful opportunity for us to share our ideas, to ask questions. So remember, please, to press *6 if you'd like to have me see that you would like to say something or ask a question. When you do that, your name pops up here. Actually, not the name, the phone number pops up, and I can unmute your phone. So that's a great option that we have at any time, because really this is your time, and anything you'd like to have me discuss or clarify or get a feeling about, I'm happy to address, as long as it has to do with the vegan living in some way. I just actually read something today that I thought was so helpful, actually. It was, about a month and a half, we were in Tucson, giving a lecture in Tucson, and we gave the lecture at a place called the Amity Foundation, which is a wonderful place you've probably never heard of. I hadn't either. But they focus on helping people who are having difficulty in life, drug addicts, alcoholics, and prison people who are out of prison, to have a get back on their feet and through the power, I guess, really, of healing through community, and a positive community, and using some of the techniques that I remember were popularized back in the 1960s and 70s, encounter groups, and being able to really share your feelings and go deeper in understanding the family dynamics, the family you were raised in, working with trauma that maybe you experienced as a child, all these things. But they're also including nutrition. And so their whole place is going vegan. It's pretty much completely vegan at this point. And so they invited us to speak there at their beautiful place. They have, I guess, the Westinghouse family way back, 150 years ago or 100 years ago, whatever it was, had bought this land and had a beautiful estate there. And now it's this Amity Foundation is using it as a place for healing for all these people. And so quite a few of them came to our lecture that we gave there. And Judy Carman was with us. It was great. She was visiting. But I spoke to those people, plus people from the local vegan community in Tucson. And it was a public event, but it was hosted there. And so they sent along some of their literature and things, and it caught up with us finally here in Palm Springs. And there was this article where the woman who wrote the article was talking about the word diet. And she said, you know, as we know, like the world peace diet or the vegan diet. And she wrote that the word diet comes from the old Greek word diata, which means a manner of living. I just think that is very, very helpful and profound, a manner of living, a way of life. So I always want to say, our way of living, I always want to say the vegan way of living. I don't want to say the vegan diet. It's the vegan way of living. That's what it is. We're not only refraining from foods that contain animal products, but we're also refraining from anything in our way of life that causes unnecessary suffering to animals as best we can. So we're not, as you all know, we're not paying to go to zoos, circuses, and rodeos and buy products that use animal skins or feathers or fur or products tested on animals and so forth. The deeper understanding, though, is that it's a way of living, and that our diet is also a way of living. And this is something that Thich Nhat Hanh emphasizes, and I think it's pretty obvious in a way, but we're always eating, right? We're eating not just food, but we're eating whatever our attention is taking in, whatever our mind is focused on. We're eating books that we're reading, or media that we're consuming, essentially. Also, I would say the thoughts and feelings that we are entertaining that are arising in us as part of our diet, the relationships that we're having, the way we respond to them as part of our diet. So, films and music and art and nature. What is our diet? How healthy is our diet? I think it's such a great question, and so helpful to realize and to remember that the word diet comes from diata, D-I-A-T-A, diata, which means a manner of living or a way of living. So that's what we're talking about today and every day. We're talking about the World Peace Diata. I should change the name maybe. World Peace Diata, World Peace Way of Living, the vegan way of living. A way of living, it's not vegan in the sense that it's creating another category that we have to put in our minds, but rather based on ahimsa, or reducing violence in our lives as best we can. So at the beginning of our call, typically we like to spend a couple of minutes just doing a short meditation, so I'd love to do that now as we go into our time together, wherever you happen to be. Please join me and everyone on the call in taking a moment to turn our attention within, and as best you can, maybe you're driving your car, so keep your eyes on the road, and let's just take a moment and begin by connecting with our breathing, this precious breath that connects us with the earth, with the atmosphere, the eternal web of life. Every breath that we breathe has atoms in it. Scientists tell us that we're breathed by literally everybody who's ever gone before us on this earth, the billions of atoms and the billions of beings. We're all interconnected through the infinite web of life here. The enlightened sages breathe the same air we're breathing now. And the water, drops of water, the molecules of water in our bodies are also connected to the great enlightened sages. The same water flowed in their bodies. And it's well known that water and air are not just material, just something beyond the material level. So we give thanks for this awareness, the awareness of our diata, of our way of living, that includes compassion and kindness for all beings. And everything that we eat and drink and breathe and think and say and do and consume, have our attention on, and are aware of, is part of our dhyata. And so we give thanks for everyone who is in our world, who is part of our awakening and our unfolding, even those who may be difficult for us are perhaps presenting us with gifts that will help us to evolve and to grow and to mature, to ripen in our wisdom. We give thanks also to those who have gone before us in the movement, the great heroes and heroines who have given their lives to help boost the consciousness of humanity, and all the unknown ones as well, the men and women and people who have made their efforts to bring peace and love and kindness and caring and mercy into the world and their relationships with their friends and families, with animals, with ecosystems, with their communities, with their colleagues, co-workers. We know that we're part of a whole web of infinitely interconnected consciousness that is rooted in the infinite source of all life. And so we give thanks knowing that every ripple that radiates out into the world from our being together here this afternoon will be a ripple to bring healing into our world, to bring more peace and health and radiant joy, not only into our own lives with wisdom, but also to the lives of all living beings. And we dedicate our lives to deepening our ability to embody what vegan living is, the vegan dhyata, the vegan way of living, based on respect and kindness for all expressions of life. So connecting with our breathing one more time, with every exhalation radiating love, compassion, joy, and peace into our world. Love, compassion, joy, and peace. May all beings be free. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be happy. And may we continue to participate in the awakening of humanity, to build a world where all beings are cared for, a world that reflects the truth that we are, the truth of the infinite interconnectedness of all life. And we give thanks knowing this is so. And so it is. Okay, wow. It was really terrific. You know, we just were on this vegan cruise. It's called the Holistic Holiday at Sea. We left out of Miami on March. On March, Sunday, March 3rd. And it was much longer. Normally, we're done by the following Sunday. I haven't done it for quite a few years, but we did it in 2009, 2011, and 2012, and it was always a 7-day, basically, be done by the early in the morning on the 7th day on Sunday, but this one went longer all the way till the following Thursday, so it was the 12th day, and we went farther, and we had many more people, 2,000 people. Instead of the usual, what we had in the earlier days was about 1,000. but every other day, basically in the morning at 7 a.m., they asked me to lead a morning meditation. So I found it to be really inspiring, actually, to lead these morning meditations. People were up there, up at 7 a.m., and it's quite a big crowd we had. One morning we had Michael Clapper, who is an old friend of ours. You probably know Michael and his wife Elise. And he's a beautiful person. But we had lots of wonderful folks joining us for the meditations in the morning. And then we also gave lectures and concerts and a panel. I was on a panel with the three other animal rights activists or animal people. Most of the people, the lecturers, were focusing on health aspects of, well, I guess what you'd call a whole food plant-based diet, like T. Colin Campbell, and Neil Barnard, and Caldwell Esselstyn, and Michael Clapper, and Ron Weiss. I don't know if you've heard of Ron Weiss. He's not quite as well known, but he's becoming very well known. He was very well received. He's the farmer doctor in New Jersey who quit being just a regular doctor with an office, moved out onto a farm in New Jersey, and grows vegetables. And his prescriptions are different vegetables that he gives. He's very knowledgeable. He's got quite a thriving practice as a general practitioner. But anyway, he was one of the other main speakers. And also, there's Brenda Davis, the famous pretty well-known dietitian from Canada. But the panel was with myself and Jonathan Balcom, who I think some of you may know. Wrote a book. He's written quite a few books on animal behavior and animal emotions, on the joy and bliss that animals can experience. His recent book, What a Fish Feels, is pretty well known. So he's written a lot of books on animal sentience. And then James Aspey, who's very well known because of his popular YouTube channel, which I think I've read recently. He's one of the top, considered one of the top five vegan YouTubers in the world. He's from Australia. He's a great guy, good friend of ours, wonderful person. He actually credits the World Peace Diet for setting him on the path of veganism. And we did an interview, which I really enjoyed, in our room. We had a nice room overlooking the ocean. And then also Dan Matthews, who's the director of programs for PETA. So the four of us were on a panel together, which is quite interesting. And anyway, it was a great opportunity, I think, to share the vegan message with lots of other people and to learn a lot. And there's always so much to learn, I think, from each other. And that's one of the great joys, I think, for me anyway, on this journey of veganism is, as the years go by, realizing how much more there is to learn. Every day, there's new discoveries being made in terms of the animal rights movement, the health consequences of food, and the economic and political and sociological and philosophical dimensions of animal liberation. I mean, there's just so much to learn, and it's always growing and changing. So please, if you have any questions about any of these things, just press *6 and let me know. And one of the things that we love to do also is participate in Veg Fests. And I want to go ahead and unmute the phone of Mark Stroud and Anna Ferguson, who are good friends of ours and colleagues. We go way back to, I think, gosh, when the World Peace Diet first came out, about 2006 or 2007, and Mark Stroud called me, and we had some great long talks about veganism, and we have been working together over the years in many ways. For 5 years, they had an annual gathering in Cincinnati, the Jubilee, which Madeline and I were at every year. It had so many well-known speakers within the animal rights movement. Pretty much everybody you know was there at one point. And so participating in that and putting on World Peace Diet facilitated trainings there. And they came to the first one we did way back in the early days, I think 2007, which was in Michigan. And now they're working hard in Cincinnati, getting ready to put on a Veg Fest in May, And so we just finished speaking a couple of days ago, actually, at the Veg Fest in Houston. It was put on by Rice University. It was great. And Silas Rao was one of the speakers, and Dr. Linda Carney, who's a pretty well-known Texas vegan MD, was also there speaking. And it's just, I always marvel at how healthy and helpful I think VegFests are in bringing the vegan message to the world, and not only for seasoned people, but for brand new people who don't even know what it is, what veganism is. They get a chance to taste food and listen to lectures and hear music and see that it's a happy, growing, very positive movement. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute the phones of Mark and Anna, and invite them to tell us a little bit about what they've been working on lately and what's coming up. So, hello, Mark and Anna.
Hello, Will.
Hi, Will. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to hear your voices. Fantastic.
Hello to everyone out there.
Right. Yeah, so it's so good to hear your voices, as I said, and I'd like to just go ahead and let you talk a little bit, if you can, tell us what you have been working on and what's coming up in Cincinnati. I think people might be interested in coming maybe to Cincinnati to join the festivities, or at least finding out more, maybe doing something similar where they live and in their local community.
Yeah, and I was just going to comment on how there are so many people coming to VegFest now that are veg curious and that are not vegan, and it's really great to see that momentum growing and that interest growing, that these are events that often have as many or more people attending that are not vegan that are.
Right.
So it's a great safe place for vegans to gather, but it's also really just great that so many new people are able to get this information, and that they're free events, and it's just really inspiring to see how many are happening in the country a year. I think over 100 VegFest
is that right?
In the United States.
Wow.
Something like that. That are happening in major cities all over the country, which is amazing.
That's fantastic. Yeah, Mark.
The VegFest is a one-day event, so it's in many ways what the World Jubilee that you were speaking of earlier is morphed into VegFest, so that we can reach more people and with a one-day event. And it also reminds me of, we get the question often, why are you doing this business? Because there's no real financial incentive. The event is free, and we have a lot of sponsors that help sponsor it financially. And we are at the studio. Sometimes it's referred to as a yoga studio, but I like to think of it as a studio of compassion. And Sunday we have what's called Sadhana Service, which is like-minded people getting together and talking and connecting with others. And recently our topic was from Chapter 13 in your book, Will, and we talked about the intuitive imperative. And
right.
So when you were talking earlier about the theme of this call, once again, it's very synchronistic, because that's exactly why I tell them that we're doing this. Because the more that we meditate, the more that we quiet our mind, the more we quiet our mind, the more we meditate. And then as a result of that, we have more empathy and more compassion. And at the heart of compassion is taking action to assist others and to make a difference. So it just comes naturally to us because of our everyday practice at the studio of compassion, that they're energized to do events like this, so that other people might be inspired to do the same, or just be inspired in their life to find some action within themselves out of their own empathy and compassion to be there for fellow animals and all other beings on the planet.
Wow, that's so well said. You know, I think you're really going deep with the underlying awareness that the inner practice, like you're saying, of meditation and yoga and quieting our mind can connect us more deeply with compassion. And the definition of compassion is not just having sympathy or empathy, but the yearning to act to help relieve the suffering of others. So the actions can spring out of this deeper awareness, and I think that's what gives more power and I think probably more effectiveness in the long term to our actions, is when it comes from a deeper place where we're not just reacting, but we're being motivated by love and awareness and a sense of kindness and respect for other expressions of life. So not being motivated from merely judging and blaming and criticizing, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's great that we have that there is this spiritual energy, spiritual focus surrounded around our particular Veg Fest, with you, of course, speaking, and we'll also have a panel of fellow vegans speaking about how yoga is vegan. Actually, Holly Scotus, she founded Yoga is Vegan. It's a blog, and she's a yoga teacher and vegan activist. And so we will have some really great, I think, spiritual dialogues happening at the event with you, of course, Will speaking, and others, and also planning for it to be a celebration, a book release party for my book, World Peace Yoga, as well.
Oh, great. So that'll be the big kind of public party for your wonderful book, World Peace Yoga.
Yeah, and at least one of the artists from the book will be there, Julie Kirkpatrick, and possibly uh-huh. Amanda Checo.
Right, great. Yeah, we just saw, we were in Houston, and we were with the Chalas, Bandana and Munish Chal. They're two MDs who have started Peaceful Planet, which is a vegan education group actually focusing a lot on the same thing you're doing, that with mindfulness and vegan living and helping people to transform their lives. And it was really great to see on the kitchen table your World Peace Yoga book sitting there just bright and happy.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Right, yeah. She really likes the book, and she was saying how you know what a great book it is. And I think, you know, it's so true that the book, you know, these books, like a book like yours, World Peace Yoga, can really make a big difference in someone's life. If they can inspire them to take up a yoga practice or to go deeper with their practice and to make connections and, you know, who knows? I mean, all kinds of seeds can get planted. So that's what's happening there. The Peaceful Planet is, we did a, you know, like a half-day workshop on there was yoga, and then I talked about effective advocacy, and there was a beautiful potluck vegan meal, and I think the whole blending of spiritual practice and yoga and meditation and vegan living gives it a deeper foundation, gives everything a deeper foundation. So that's great. It's going to be, I should say, I don't know if we've actually mentioned, but it's going to be May 18th, right? That's the date, Saturday, May 18th?
Yes, May 18th, and it'll be a full-day event from around 11 to 8.
Great. Fantastic. Yeah, so Madeline and I are planning on being there, and do you want to say anything more about the VegFest?
I'll mention a few other people that are going to be there, Christopher Otis and his wife,
Sarah Oakley,
are going to be there from the Vegan Warrior Academy. So,
right.
Yeah, their spiritual foundation to the party. And then on the food side, we've got Yoko coming, Yoko Shinner, so she's a vegan superstar, so she's going to be there with all her glorious vegan cheeses.
She's really, I have to say, not just on the food side. I mean, she's really an animal rights activist through and through, and she has her own sanctuary. I've been to her sanctuary in California where they've rescued quite a few animals there, and she spoke, when I spoke at the Animal Rights March in San Francisco, and so she's really, I think, a wonderful example, like you're saying, of someone who went deep into their heart and connected with compassion and then came out and decided to do something, and for her it was to make amazing vegan cheese, to get people to go vegan,
mm-hmm.
and butter and so forth, you know, and to help people realize that you're not giving anything up. I mean, not that it's something that I actually ever buy myself, but very often anyway, it's too rich really. But I think it's fantastic for people who don't want to miss the richness that cheese offers, and if you want something now and then that's really good quality and cruelty free and so forth, it's really fantastic. So I'm so glad she's going to be there. She's a wonderful speaker and a great example.
Yeah, she's a real force in nature. So
she really is.
That she's going to be there. Yeah. So yeah, we'll have lots of music. So there's going to be music, pretty much nonstop music all day long. Speakers, food demos, and food vendors, and it's in a beautiful park in Cincinnati. And so we're really looking forward to a great day to move the movement forward.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Press *6 if you have any questions for Mark or Anna. We've got them on the line here, and I just think it's such a wonderful thing to do in any community. It can be a large community wherever you live or a smaller community. I think I mentioned it once at one point here maybe, but I remember we were in San Luis Obispo a few years ago, and we did a half-day workshop with some of the local vegan activists, and we discussed all kinds of different things about veganism, and they really wanted to know what they could do to help bring the movement forward in their area, and I mentioned that, putting on a veg fest would be a great idea, and 2 years later, they had their first veg fest, and now they had their second veg fest. They did this past year. I haven't been able to go yet to speak, but they're really successful. They've had, I think 4,000 or 5,000 people show up or something. It's a pretty busy, very veg-friendly community. It's just they have a lot of obstacles, also a lot of animal agriculture in the area. So I think it's a lot in a way like Cincinnati. I mean, you have a lot of the vegan movement is growing. There's still a huge animal agriculture all around you there in Ohio, and just to bring this message forward. But people could learn. I'm sure you could. Yeah, share some of your tips for people. Getting sponsors, for example, is one really important thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
maybe shift a little bit, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about some of the other projects that are connected with VegFest, of course. The school, the Vegan Montessori School, is just about to finish its second year, so it's moving right along, and we're about to expand from 2.5 to 6-year-olds. Next year we'll actually have 6 to 9-year-olds. So
really?
That first
Great.
Class that started from 2.5 to 6, now be able to go to 6 to 9, and then we'll go from 9 to 12, and then all the way through high school. So as the school grows and that first group moves on, eventually we'll have school for 2.5 all the way through to graduate from high school. So,
whoa, that's amazing. Yeah, that's really a very ambitious undertaking to have such a full school, but something needed. It's one of the only totally vegan schools, I think, in the United States. It's really based on veganism.
Yeah, it is one of the first, and also just really incorporating the whole permaculture and spirituality and how that all fits together. So we really appreciate that it's and the parents and the children, and that it's growing and that people realize the importance of it. It's so foundational.
Yeah.
To have small children grow up their entire life with these things that are so new to so many adults. For them, it'll just be their way of life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Connecting kids with growing their own food, especially within a permaculture way, where you're really recycling everything and building healthy soil and working with the land without any animal inputs. I mean, that's a whole new challenge. And most people think you need to have some manure and this and that, and to realize you can do it without any of those inputs.
Yes.
And real quick, the World Peace Diet Cookbook is coming along. Of course, we're focusing and celebrating the World Peace Yoga book, but the cookbook is coming along, and we finally got our construction permits, so we're about to break ground on our expanding the studio of compassion, and so it'll be a larger facility to accommodate more practitioners on a spiritual path, and that is also going to include a vegan restaurant, so and all that moving along as well.
Great. I know this has been a dream you've had for quite a few years to expand.
Yeah.
I know Matt and I have been there near downtown Cincinnati on Ludlow Avenue, the vegan One World, the World Peace Yoga Studio, and now the restaurant. Great, a vegan restaurant will be on the same building.
The
Peace House Grill, we call it. So, yes, the Peace House Grill will be there at the Peace House. So, the nickname for the studio is the Peace House. So, that's
Peace House. Yeah. Great, and the cookbook too. That's good news to hear.
Yeah,
that'll be coming. Yeah. Well, you guys have been busy, and I know everything has its own time, and it's great to see these things coming to fruition. Really appreciate all your efforts. I know it's a lot to do all these things and keep all the balls in the air, juggling your lives and a school and a veg fest and a new restaurant and everything else. I know there's even a lot more.
Well, thanks so much, Bill. Really appreciate all that you do, Madeline as well.
Yeah, well, we're all on our own path, and I think we can inspire each other, inform each other, and in some ways support each other in what we're doing. And your example is great. Is there a website people can go to that would kind of have a lot of this stuff in one place? Or?
Well, CincyVegFest.com will have all the VegFest information. But pretty much if you go to Cincy VegFest or World Peace Yoga or HeartMontessoriSchool.com, you can get to all the different activities that we're doing by going to any of those sites.
Oh, good. Okay, they're all interconnected. Good. Yeah. Great. Wow. So, we're looking forward to seeing you in a couple of months, and I hope that some of the folks on the call will maybe join us in Cincinnati in May on the 18th. And or get inspired to do a veg fest or help out a local team. It usually takes a team to do a veg fest in where you live, because veg fests are great. We have one now in Santa Rosa too, besides the one in San Francisco. And I think they can be small. They don't have to be huge, but it's really great to see them internationally growing too. I mean, gosh, when we travel the world and we see them these huge veg fests in all over the world now. So it's really an idea whose time has come, and the vegan school is another idea whose time has come, and vegan yoga and, of course, vegan cookbooks, goes without saying, are ideas that we really can do everything we can to help promote, because I think we all know we just don't have time to fool around here. So the more we can spread the message and have a good time doing it, I think that's the most important thing. All right, well, any final words that you'd like to share before we go? Nobody's raised their hand at this point, so I guess everybody's happy with what you're saying.
Just to simply say how deeply we appreciate our collaboration with you, Will, and Madeline, and let anyone know that if they have any interest in vegan school or any of the thing related to the project that we're working on, get in touch. We're an open book to share and to help assist guide people along the way. So.
Great. Okay, I'll mention that in the email I send out, that if anyone's interested, they can contact you. Cool.
Wonderful.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us and for your efforts, and we'll see you soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Will.
Great. Okay, yeah. Bye-bye. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Wow. Well, that was really exciting, I think. To hear, I wasn't expecting all that. I mean, I know they've been working on the school, and I just didn't know how it was. I haven't been in touch with them for a while, so I wasn't sure how it's going, but it sounds like it's expanding and doing well. And I think this Veg Fest is a great idea, and this is, I think, the first time they're really putting on a citywide Veg Fest. I think they did one at the university a few years ago, but this one will be for the whole city. And they're working with some other local vegan activists and sponsors. So, great. So, again, press *6 if you have any issues you'd like me to address. I'm happy to do that. Madeline and I have been, again, traveling the last 2 months, almost 3 months now. We're at the very end of a three-month lecture tour, most of January, all of February and March. We've been on a lecture tour, and I've been answering so many questions. After every speech talk, we did a lot. I think, what did we do? We did, I think it was in, I wrote it down somewhere. We did 20, I think it was, yeah, we did, for the 6 weeks, the tour we just did in Florida to Texas, we did, it was a 40-day, it was exactly 6 weeks or 42 days. We did 55 events, so we had actually, we did at least one event every day. Some days we did two. So we were meeting a lot of people, and we did also, I think, in Texas, it was just a 12-day whirlwind tour. We did 22 events in 12 days in Texas. They really kept us busy there. We were doing morning, afternoon, and evening events very often. And all over the place, in Galveston, Beaumont, down in San Antonio, at Angleton, Rowdy Girls Sanctuary there, we went there, in San Marcos, up in Austin, in Denton, and Dallas, and Houston, several places in Houston. So it's great to see the vegan movement really growing in Texas, especially, of course, in Austin, and Houston, and Dallas. And to work with the local people and see the success of the restaurants and of the Veg Fest. The Veg Fest was twice as big as last year at Rice University. I think it was probably 2,000 people. And the whole notion, I guess, really of giving a talk and then answering questions and helping people to connect with their own inner wisdom about how we should live on this earth and what kind of a solution do we have. You know, I was reading an article the other day where the writer was talking about how virtually everything we've tried has not worked in terms of, like she said, you know, capitalism hasn't worked, socialism hasn't worked, libertarianism hasn't worked, whatever economic or political systems we've tried just don't seem to work, and we're at the point now where the nuclear weapons proliferation, the global climate destabilization and other environmental destruction is reaching such epic proportions that it's very obvious that what we've been doing hasn't worked. And so she was kind of begging to know what would work? What would really turn things around? And I think it's pretty obvious that all of these systems are based, unfortunately, on the basic underlying ground of animal agriculture, which is the problem. Animal agriculture creates the environmental devastation, the cultural authoritarianism, and repression and violence towards the sacred feminine dimension of not only in our society, but within ourselves, that basically reflects itself in the way we do finances, the way we do politics, the way we do relationships, and the way we relate to the earth. All these things are coming out of the food, which is our most intimate connection with nature and with animals and with our society. So if we don't change that, nothing's going to change. And if we do change that, everything will change. So that seems to be the basic way forward. And yet it's still not recognized as such, although I think more and more it is. We're seeing that people are spreading this message in all kinds of ways. I did want to mention that last month we had Philip Nicozisis on the call with us, and he was talking about his new book, Have Laptop, Will Travel, Adventures of a, a digital nomad, I think it's called. He spent 1 year traveling around the world, 12 different cities in 12 months, in a work travel program, and I've been reading the book since then. He's asked everyone to, if possible, to read the book. It's easy to get it on Kindle. It's just a few dollars, and to put up a review. And I'm enjoying it. He really talks about quite a bit about his efforts to convey the vegan message and to live it, and the trials and tribulations of traveling, which we know quite a bit about, and we've traveled with Philip also, ourselves. And like he says, you really get to know other people when you're traveling with them, and that's when we sometimes are challenged with things that are much more difficult to handle than if we're just at home. So, but we love it. You know, we love the traveling that we do, because not only does it help us to share the message, but it also helps us to and reach more people, but to also learn and grow about ourselves. And so anyway, I just want to recommend, if you have a chance, to get the Have Laptop Will Travel book by Philip Nicozisis, and leave a review. And then, of course, get the new book by, it's been out for a little while now. It's been out, I think, almost a year, maybe not that long. I guess it's been about a year or half a year, by Anna Ferguson. The title is World Peace Yoga. And, I'm excited to hear that Mark is getting ready to hopefully pretty soon release the World Peace cookbook, which is also based on the World Peace Diet and recipes that he's put together. He was one of the original people, or early on anyway, at Hippocrates Health Institute, where we just were in South Florida. And he worked there in the kitchen, which is completely different from the Peace House Grill, because Hippocrates, as you know, is a completely 100%, not 100%, but 90% raw. It's mostly sprouts and raw vegetables, and very little fruits, and very little cooked food at all. Maybe just a little bit of cooked millet in the morning or something like that. But for most people, it's raw. It's a healing, cleansing kind of a place where people go who usually have serious health challenges, diabetes and obesity and heart disease and cancer and these kinds of things. So they want radical changes, so the diet's pretty radical to help with that. You can also go and just have a health retreat for a week or two. And then if you're doing that, you get permission to have a little more looser foods. But it's definitely low oil and low salt, low sugar. And the food is very healing. And that's what we found also on the cruise. It was this very similar philosophy, low oil, low salt, low sugar. And all of the recipes that they were, and the way they were talking about eating, you know, these sort of famous whole food plant-based authors and the doctors were emphasizing that this is the way to go. So Madeline and I are moving more and more in that direction. We always have been in that direction, but it just seems like we keep moving more and more that way. And So, but it's not to say that you can't also be healthy and happy having a little, having some salt, sugar, and oil in your diet. Just everything in moderation. And in our society, since we are really raised in a culture that's completely overblown in terms of salt, oil, and sugar, what we might think is in moderation maybe isn't that moderate. So it's good to be, I think, aware of the many benefits of trying to eliminate as much as possible any processed foods, especially processed oils and highly processed foods. It's just something comes out of a factory. Typically it has ingredients and energy in general. It's not as conducive to the health of the environment and also our own health as if we just buy the foods directly, or better yet, grow them ourselves. Buy the grains and beans and veggies and fruits and nuts and seeds and whole foods, really delicious, or, you know, pretty much whole. Like we're now substituting, for example, instead of Vegenaise. We've always loved Vegenaise, but we went to the store the other day after we came back, and I think for the first time in quite a while, we just didn't buy any. We have no Vegenaise in the refrigerator. And we are using either, you know, something else, like either water or water mixed with tahini, something like that. You can make a light dressing that way. There's things we can do, and the taste buds really do get used to these things with time. So just experiment, see how it goes. But these are some things that we heard over and over again. And, you know, showing these the films of arteries when Michael Clapper had really graphic, some really excellent graphic video footage of arteries when we're just, when we're eating non-fatty foods, and you can see how the blood is flying along. The blood is actually moving in our arteries very quickly, like at something like 20 miles an hour or something. It's like zooming through when the heart beats. The blood is like flowing along fast. And then he showed after a meal with olive oil, you know, and olive oil is considered healthy, you know, in a lot of ways. I mean, it's better than pork rinds or something like that. But even with olive oil, when the fat reaches the veins, the set and the arteries, you could just see this, it just slowed down so dramatically. It was like just kind of crawling through the arteries. And so I think, you know, it's good to be aware that we never ate oil, you know, human beings. They never ate oil. I mean, that was something. What human beings ate had a lot of fiber typically. So when we would eat some olives, but to get like one teaspoon of olive oil, you'd have to eat 30 olives. So if you're eating 30 olives, you're getting all the fiber and all the minerals and all the water and a little bit of oil. And so when it hits your arteries, it doesn't slow anything down. It's just a tiny little droplet, a little tiny spray of oil. It's not noticeable, but when we eat a whole tablespoon of oil in the form of either oil or mayonnaise or something like that, then it's a different story. It's not something that our bodies really were ever designed to deal with and very much. So I think this is something, that's why, like, when we hear about the wonderful vegan ice creams, the wonderful vegan cheeses, the wonderful vegan butters. Yeah, they're wonderful if they can get people to stop stabbing animals in the neck and stealing their babies and impregnating them on rape racks. It's extremely, I love it. I mean, it's great, you know. But once you've made the transition to veganism and understand it, then I think it's really a good idea to think of the ramifications on our body of eating these foods, which are really in many ways a relic of animal agriculture, eating all this saturated fat and cholesterol and processed foods. That's all a relic. It's a manifestation of animal agriculture and a manifestation of the attitude and mindset of reductionism and materialism that animal agriculture indoctrinates into all of us, where we create a competitive economic system that tries to get people addicted to foods that are inherently addictive, like tobacco and meat and dairy and fat, sugar and salt. These are toxic foods that are quite addictive. So when we understand that, we can also realize that we're liberating animals. We can liberate ourselves by understanding the effect of these foods. And being conscious, being mindful, I think that's really the key, and getting the information. And that's one of the good things I think about this cruise, for example, and any or veg fest. You can have a lot of people together sharing information. We were speaking at the Sedona Veg Fest also recently, and that's a great veg fest. And there was, again, some really well-known, like Dr. Joel Kahn and people, Robert Cheek, talking about nutrition and how, again, it's a whole food plant-based diet is like the Cadillac. It's the Model T, in a sense. I mean, it's the least expensive and simplest way of eating, but it's also the Rolls Royce, right? I mean, it's the highest quality nutrients, the highest quality of energy, the food that we just grow ourselves or buy at local farmers markets from people. Really, if we can, organic and whole foods and so forth is best you can get. So, and not just for ourselves, but for the whole world. So I wanted to emphasize that way that's been rekindled always in us through Hippocrates and through the cruise and the veg fest and just in general to be, you know, aware of these things. And so I also wanted to, since I don't see anybody pressing star six, I don't see any particular questions. There's a few other things that I wanted, was hoping to talk about here on our wonderful call. I always love this opportunity that we have on the third Thursday of every month to check in and share ideas about what's happening in the movement. The next one we're having, just to be aware, will be on the 18th, on the third Thursday. So it's a little bit brief. I mean, we had a 5-week before this one, and we'll only have a 3-week until the next one. And when we go back, we'll be busy, busy. We have lots of lectures coming up in Santa Rosa. But I wanted to, there's a couple of issues that I think still need to be illuminated, and I want to do that. So actually, somebody just raised their hand. So I'll go ahead and take this question, and then I want to talk about these two things. So here we go. Hello.
Hi, it's Nancy Posnick.
Oh, hi, Nancy. Thank you.
Oh, you didn't recognize my number because I'm calling from my home line instead of my cell.
Oh, okay. Well, it's always good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Calling. Yeah.
You too. I'm so glad I got in on the call. And I just wanted to give a shout-out for the Vegan Burger Smackdown that I'm organizing in Baltimore on April 28th.
Wow. What's that? I never heard of it. I don't think I'm aware of that. That's great.
Really? I just did an interview with Marlene Narrow.
Oh, yeah, right. I saw that. Yeah,
and
it's
published now, and she did it to help, you know, promote that too. But
right.
We had a really great conversation just about, you know, why going vegan. And it was spontaneous. I didn't know what she was going to ask me or what I was even going to say. But
right.
I listened to it. It actually turned out pretty good.
Wonderful.
I had no idea. I was a little nervous, and, you know, so we got to talk about some good things. And it's really, now you're talking about, like, processed and no salt, and I sort totally understand that. But I also think that these, you know, meat-like vegan products are going to still be really, and I know you understand that, you know, really essential.
Yeah.
But part of this is I'm going to have the Possible Burger there, and I might have the Beyond Burger, but there's six. But it was really important to me to have whole food, plant-based burgers, you know, really healthy foods. You can recognize the ingredients, not processed, start from scratch, so people can see how, you know, all the variety that there is. And
great.
And, I talk about it. I say, you know, the flavors, bursting with flavor is only possible with plants. Because it's
great.
True, you know. So it's going to be fun, and that's what I feel like I really have come to this conclusion, that it's really important that we, you know, grasp that vegan is about non-commodification of sentient beings and, you know, animals and people. For me, it's justice for everyone, you know. And I do understand, you know, why it's important the animals have their own movement. And I wanted people's introduction, I wanted people to associate vegan with something joyful and fun and positive. And this is just so important, you know, create that vision ahead.
Right.
Yeah, because that's what people stick with, you know. But I also shared, you know, what made me go vegan, and it was undercover videos of animal agriculture and how that impacted me. And I talked about, you know, the World Peace Diet and how your, you know, your work helped me so much, too, to just understand how did we get in this mess to begin with, because it's very confusing. You know?
Right.
Like, exactly. What the hell, you know, how could we be doing this, you know? And so that's one thing I feel that the World Peace Diet really has helped me with. And it's a kind of a never-ending process. It just makes sense out of it. It doesn't make it okay, but it's sort of like I see a lot of vegans, especially online, like re-victimizing themselves over the way the world is. You know, why are people like this? And they hate slaughterhouse workers, and they hate this, and they hate that, you know.
I know.
And it's over and over, and if you try to say anything with clarity, you're called an ableist. You know, and it's like, no, I do not think that anybody, I do not think it's okay for anybody to work at a slaughterhouse. But, you know, people are maybe kind of masochistic, but a lot of them, you know, they really, I don't know. But I just know there's immigrants that are on work visas.
Oh, they're undocumented. Most of them are undocumented.
Yeah.
And they're just, I mean, really, I've been to these places.
Horrible.
These poor people, they're victims also of a terribly unjust and violent system, and it's the lowest caste really in the United States as a slaughterhouse worker. You can't get lower than that. That's the terror. I mean,
no.
They usually don't last very long.
Bad.
But very often they're undocumented and they're trying to make
$2.
Yeah, so you're right.
Oh,
that's
my God.
True.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Can you imagine something I tell people is like, you know, people want to justify and humane slaughter and all this. Okay, it's okay. How would you feel having an intimate long-term relationship with somebody that worked in a slaughterhouse? They come home from work. How was your day, dear? Would you want to hear about their day? Would you want that in your home? I mean, what are you going to talk?
Right.
You know, how would you feel if it was that close to you? And most people would be just grossed out by that, you know?
Oh, so terrible.
A lot of it is bringing the message home. And rather than saying, like, okay, this is something other people are doing and I'm just the innocent bystander, I'm buying the products, I was like, no, I'm directly responsible for this.
Right.
And that
was
a big shift for me when I went vegan. I saw, like, okay, no, it's not like somebody else doing it. They're doing it because I'm paying for it.
Right.
And it's horrible to make someone else do that. So that's all I wanted to say. But it's going to be fun and upbeat. We've got some great speakers. And it's going to be really fun. So that's all. VeganBurgerSmackdown.com. If anybody
love the
on the
title.
Phone... call comms, let me know. I'll make sure you get in. I'll give you a complimentary pass for a couple of
days. I'll go ahead and make a link to that.
And Will,
email.
If you're there, I'm going to give you some burgers and a microphone.
Wow. Well, we'll be in California then, but we'll be thinking of you. That's
okay.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Yeah. I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Okay.
Nancy. Yeah, bye. Yeah, I think that's a very important point that she's making. You know, this movement is so rich. I mean, our movement is the richest, most diverse, most complex, most all-encompassing movement you can imagine. I mean, everything, it encompasses every aspect of our society, and it encompasses the most horrific violence and the most sublime, delicious food and creativity, and I think that's the thing. That's why I think it's challenging to be in the movement, because on the one hand we have what is the animal rights movement or the vegan movement or the ahimsa compassion movement to the public? It's angry activists yelling at people who are patronizing a restaurant or a Whole Foods, or it's the anonymous but voiceless who are doing a cube of truth and showing the hideous abuse of animals in public squares and on public streets. And it's the sage movement who are holding vigils outside slaughterhouses and giving water to desperately thirsty pigs and other animals. And all of this is very sad. I mean, people holding, you know, like the some of the public demonstrations are people holding dead animals in their hands by hundreds of people. And so it's this very solemn, heartbreaking kind of energy, and something very needed. I think it's important. There's definitely a place for this kind of a consciousness raising to really show and deepen our awareness of the terrible violence towards animals and what's happening all around us all the time. And then we also have what we've been talking about here tonight, Veg Fest, which in many ways are sort of the polar opposite of that, where we have all these booths of vegan food and very often vegan junk foods, in a sense, or vegan convenience foods, maybe a better word, and the other vegan products and music and laughter and dancing and people raving about how delicious the food is, like a big party. Come to the party, come join the party. This is the healthiest, most environmentally friendly. This is the way forward. And so we have those two extremes and everything in between, you know, the lectures and panels and movies and music and art and everything else. So there's a place for everyone, counseling, coaching, understanding the whole health. I mean, the health side of this is just booming. I mean, Michael Clapper is now full-time just visiting and lecturing at medical schools to the young students and telling them, you know, you need to learn about nutrition. And this is happening across the board. I mean, the MDs we stayed with in Houston, the Chawlas, are now working to help. They're basically completely transitioning their practice to have a practice that's based on meditation and veganism for healing. And we're finding, you know, more and more doctors are doing that. They're just getting out of the traditional models. And this is definitely the way of the future. And as he says, it's not alternative. We shouldn't use the word alternative. Munish Chawla was saying, it's evidence-based medical practice that is coming, that is of the future. And so it's totally evidence-based. It's not alternative. It's evidence. You kept stressing that it's evidence-based, scientific, you know, scientifically evidence-based medical practice. And this other way of practicing medicine, really based on drugs and surgery, is really, in some ways it's evidence-based, but a lot of it's evidence-free. I mean, it really doesn't, we have literally hundreds of thousands of people dying every year from side effects of drugs, for example. These drugs are so toxic. So that's really critical to be aware of. We got another call here. Okay, I'll go ahead and take this question. This is Andy. I can see. Hello.
Hi, Will. Andy? This is Andy. Hi.
Yes, hi. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Yours, too. You guys were just talking about something that has given me ideas, but maybe you've already done this before, but where you're talking about the workers, I believe, if I heard correctly, the workers in the slaughterhouse and
yes,
the horrible, how challenging the job is for them, I'm wondering, because I'm always posting things on Facebook and, you know, me, like I'm sure other people have, you know, tons of friends that are not vegan that say, you know, we need meat, or, you know, they've got their addictive habits. But especially with politics that are happening today and the racism and things like that, and my friends that are into politics are very against racism. And, you know, anything bad happening to any type of person, they want to stop it. So I'm thinking this would be a wonderful opportunity for me to post things, and I don't know if there's better information that I can find out about online or where it's posted. Like, let's say how do they even find people to work in slaughterhouses and about these people's lives and what they have to go through and things like that, almost like not even bringing up so much of the animals, which I bring up all the time, and the suffering of the animals. If I can start posting out there the suffering of the people and what they have to go through and what their lives are like and how do they even find people, you know, what would you put in a job description, you know, to try to find a slaughterhouse worker? Is there any place I can find info on that, or
Right, that's a really good question, and it's one of those sort of a black hole in journalism. Very few people want to write about that because most people who are journalists and are eating animal foods, and of course the main advertisers in the media are the fast food industries, the pharmaceutical industries, the chemical industries. They're all making big money on this, so they don't want to have any journalism that shows the terrible conditions that factory farm workers, factory farm and slaughterhouse workers have to endure. But there are articles. I've posted some here on the Will Peace Guide in our resources, which is, you know,
in the Facebook group or somewhere else.
Yeah, sometimes in the Facebook group is a good one, and then also sometimes when I see them, I post them. Every month I send the resources that I put together for the Will Peace Guide facilitators. I can check and see if I can quickly identify a couple. But there's been a few studies that have been done recently, I guess in the last year or two, and I think they've been published in alternative media on the terrible conditions of workers and the traumatic stress disorder that they're enduring in their jobs, and I think it would be something that, you know, just to emphasize. I mean, I've been to these. I mean, I've seen the ones I've been to. I mean, there's no white people working. That's for sure. I mean, it's Hispanics, it's blacks, and it's Asians, and a lot of them are definitely undocumented. It's well known they're undocumented. A lot of them.
Wow.
It's the jobs that nobody wants to do. And they're just, you know, they can't say anything. There's no bargaining. There's no anything. You know, the recent article I read, it talked about how the workers have to just wear diapers because they don't stop the line. You pretty soon you have to poop, you have to pee. You can't. You
oh
just do it. You either
gosh.
Do it in your you do it in your pants or you,
see,
you have to wear a diaper.
These are things that would be spectacular to start, to me, to start getting out to the public for people that so-called at least care about people. You know, that are not willing to look at the animal issue, but if they can hear the horrible things happening to people because of what we're doing every time we order these dead animal products.
No, it's such a terrible problem. Even when I wrote the World Peace Diet, I talk about it, how they keep increasing the line speeds. It makes it harder and harder on the workers. There's more repetitive injuries and injuries from the sharp knives and all that because these animals are whirling by, and, you know, so fast they barely have time.
And
do
they even help them recover from the injuries, or do they just hire somebody new and let them go?
There's no really long term workers. Nobody can work in that industry. They burn out, and they usually. I mean, from what I've read, it's not the kind of a thing. It's not a career. You know, it's such a violent. So hard, so much traumatic stress for the workers, so they just they don't really have any protection. That's the problem. It's very similar to the animals. I mean, they keep speeding up the lines. They're even faster now than when I wrote the World Peace Diet. They keep, especially under the Trump administration. You know, they're taking away even the few
everything.
Safeguards. There really wasn't anything there anyway. But even that they took away.
Right.
I mean,
find this? I would love to find it and just, you know, something that if I could get maybe 2 to 5 paragraphs that would be so bold, just that would really catch people's eyes on these workers that are in the slaughterhouse and everything they have to deal with, where could I find this? Or is this something maybe you could post somewhere on the World Peace Diet, what is it, the facilitators group? I don't see that often, but wherever I would love to find, you know, some paragraphs or where I could access information, you know, so that I could just start posting this on a regular basis. I would love to. I think this would really wake people up. I mean, I hope it would.
Right.
You know,
yeah, it's definitely something that it certainly, I always mention it when I give lectures because I think it's important for people to realize that even if you don't care about animals,
okay,
if you just only care about people, the workers and the starving people also are so harmed by animal agriculture because it's so wasteful and so violent. And I'll go ahead and see if I can easily identify one, and I'll put it up on the World Peace Diet Facilitators group, Facebook group.
Great. Thank you so much, and I'll try to copy it and post it on Facebook and try to do it on a regular basis. So, and at least bring up the conversation, and, you know, so I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this and for everything always. I really appreciate it. Okay,
great.
Thanks, Will. Okay.
Thanks, Andy.
Bye. All right, bye.
Bye. We have somebody else who's raised their hand now, so I'll go ahead and unmute your phone. Hello. Sure.
Hi, Will. Lily here.
Oh, Lily. Hi. Great.
Hi.
You're here.
Anyway, you know, this whole thing, this particular slaughterhouse issue came up with a very close friend of mine who loves the World Peace Diet just the other day. And, you know, I have a different take on it. I really think that these people that come here and are drawn to this because they don't really care about the animals at all, or they couldn't do it. They just don't have a relationship with them at all. And they're drawn to it because there are many, many jobs that I have people here who are undocumented, and they are absolutely wonderful, and they help me on my property, and they're wonderful caregivers. They have a lot to give. So the people that are actually working in the slaughterhouses are keeping the system going, because if they didn't have workers, the whole system would fold. And they think they have to do it because they want all the contraptions that they, you know, it might pay more maybe than doing a caregiver job for an elderly person or an elderly couple. It might pay more, but they need it to have more, right? Because they need everything that America offers, which is a bunch of toys and games and bells and whistles. And so the whole system to me, they're just in lockstep with each other. The people who demand the food, they demand that what they call the food, the hideousness of it all, but they're not the only ones. They're not the only perpetrators. Those people that are working in the slaughterhouses are also perpetrators. Because as I say, I know a lot of beautiful undocumented people. My county, half the people here that, you know, are here from Mexico are undocumented. And they are fantastic people. And they're not working in slaughterhouses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just my take on it. And I just had a very angry conversation with someone that I hope I never talk to again. So I'm sorry if I have an angry kind of thing now. But I am very passionate about this, because the slaughter workers are not the poor, innocent victims. I don't make them out to be that at all. They're not. They know what they're getting into, and they don't have a relationship with other sentient beings, and that's why they do it. And these people that are here that I dearly love would never do that. And I even asked one of them, I said, if you got paid more than I pay you, because I pay the people who come here, and maybe if you got more than $20 an hour at a slaughterhouse, would you work? And went, absolutely not.
Right.
So they are in lockstep with the people who want it.
Right.
So if they didn't have the workers, they wouldn't have the business, and if they didn't have the eaters, they wouldn't have the workers.
Right.
And the workers would find other things to do that are beautiful things that they can do, like the people that I work with all the time here.
Right.
Most of the people I know here are actually undocumented.
Yeah.
And they're
right.
Beautiful people who would never work in a slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I have to say, you know. And
great.
You know, take it or leave it. And may I say one more thing, because I've been just seething. That's what you need. You need an angry vegan, right? After 12 years of being a vegan of a peaceful kind because of the World Peace Diet, I'm really angry about people who are going around being vegan and saying they're vegan. I wish they wouldn't say they were vegan, because if they are feeding their animals other slaughtered animals so that they can have pets, they are eating a plant-based diet, which is fine, but they are not vegan. And I have seven animals here. Six of them are either 12 or 13 or 14 years old. They've been on evolution diet now for 12 years, because the first week that I went vegan, I started looking for someone that could supply me with vegan pet food, or I would make it myself. My dogs act like puppies, the 13 and the 12-year-old. The 12-year-old has been on evolution diet now since he was only a few months old. I have all the others, the Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, and Norma, and they are 13 and 14 years old now, and they've been on evolution diet for 12 years. And then we have Princess Madeline Tuttle Pussy Willow, who is now almost three, and the only time she was a tiny little baby found in the forest, big as my hand, and I fed her organic goat milk for 1 month, and then I switched her to evolution diet, and they're shooting here, and who knows, it could be a deer hunter. But anyway, regardless of that, I'm telling you, these animals are thriving. They're beautiful. They're absolutely in perfect shape, and evolution diet has been around for 30 years. It's not just for dogs. It's for cats, and they have organic, and they have grain-free. It's the most wonderful thing. And I see my animals, and they don't have fleas. They don't have, all kinds of skin conditions, and they're not eating tortured, poisoned animals. And the animals are constantly dying of cancer. And why is that? Because they're eating cancerous animals. The worst of the worst things go into the pet food.
Right.
So it's really important to get the word out, because Eric Wiseman did a wonderful thing 30 years ago. He invented a vegan, complete pet food with the taurine and everything, and it's for cats and dogs and ferrets and anybody else you want to give it to. You can eat it yourself. Right. It's all good food. So I'm just going to be quiet now, but it's been something I've been just to such a very major thing with me. It's so major.
Right.
It's like I can't stand it. I don't want people.
Right.
They can call themselves anything they want. They can call themselves the Queen of England, but if you're a vegan, you're not going to feed tortured animals to your pets, your your non-human family members. You won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say goodbye.
All right.
Sorry,
so
Will.
Much,
I had
no,
I had
okay.
to. I just
yeah,
had
that's
to put
a good
my.
Point.
But yeah.
Right. No, I agree. Thanks.
I know you do. And I've tried to be like you, Will, but I am, one of these. I've tried to be more, quiet and toned down, but I'm not. That's not my nature, and so I'm very passionate about it.
Great.
About the workers also about, the vegan pet food. Because if I didn't see it right here in front of my beautiful Fran, I mean, my God, this cat is 13 and a half years old, and she is in gorgeous. She's gorgeous shape,
Right.
So, it can be done.
Yeah.
It can be done.
Yes.
Eric
Good.
Wiseman.
All right.
Evolution diet. That's the thing.
Right.
And I don't even work for him.
All right.
But I'm grateful.
Thanks,
to
Lily.
Him. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, that's wonderful. Thanks. Yeah,
bye-bye.
Yeah, so I think it's just about almost an hour and a half here, so we're getting to the end of our time. I was hoping to cover two other things. But those are good points everybody has been making, and about the workers. And, I would just say, as far as the workers go, that I think the old saying, hurt people, hurt people. I think hurt people, hurt animals. And I think if we, there's a lot of, it's amazing to me when we travel, and even just traveling in the United States or worldwide, how genuinely friendly and good people, most people seem to be, even considering the devastating situations that many people are in economically and so forth. But there are a lot of, I think, very desperate people coming up from situations in Central and South America, perhaps the United States or from Asia, especially, and they need to send money back to their families. And they're willing to do terrible work
or they've been abused themselves as children, so their feelings have been numbed. So I think it's important just to have compassion for all of the victims, and the perpetrators are very often our victims themselves, and to hold our hearts open to the suffering of all beings. And I also really think it's important to be aware of the devastating impact of meat and dairy, meat production for cats and dogs in our society, because it is a huge industry. And as I get this question a lot when we have Q&A after my lectures, what about my cat? What about my dog? And I basically say the same thing Lily just said. It's becoming really well understood that we do not need to feed meat, especially to dogs. I mean, dogs, virtually all dogs can thrive on a plant-based diet, and this is pretty well documented. In fact, there is a plant-based dog food, I think it is, plant-based dog food summit that's going on right about now, or will be going soon. I got a notice of it. They're having, I think it's like a dozen veterinarians and other experts on plant-based dog foods. So they're interviewing them, and it's a whole summit on plant-based dog food, vegan dog food. And so there's a lot of information coming about that. Cats, I think, also, for the most part, can thrive on a vegan diet. I have heard that some male cats might have a problem because they need a really acidic food, or they get a urinary tract infection. But for the most part, I think it's, you know, we should definitely make the effort, because, the dogs and cats in the United States, if they were a nation, if just the dogs and cats in the United States were a nation, it would be the number five in the world in terms of meat consumption. So we're talking about a major impact of killing millions of animals. And, of course, most of it's byproduct of what we eat. But still, it's part of the profits for those industries that kill fish, that kill chickens, that kill pigs, that kill cows. A big part of their profits does go to the rendering plant for dog food, cat food. And also, of course, it goes to feed to the imprisoned cows, pigs, and chickens as well. So, yes, that needs to be, Lily is right to raise awareness about that. And I was going to mention the other two things I wanted to talk about. I'll just tell you what they are. Maybe we can get to it next time. Number one was the lab-grown meat or cell-based meat or clean meat. And we get asked that a lot, too. And my thinking is evolving on that, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that. But I think more and more I'm really getting more and more strongly opposed to it. I think in many ways it is a hoax. It's not going to... I mean, we don't even know if it'll ever work, but even if it does work, it's completely unnecessary. We have the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Burger and Tempe and Tofu and Seitan and goodness knows all other kinds of food. We don't need meat. It's reinforcing meat. And it's actually a way for the industries, for the meat, dairy, and egg industries, and the pharmaceutical industry, which thrives on illness, and cell-grown meat is high in saturated fat, cholesterol, acidifying, and inflammatory animal protein. It's not healthy. It's very unhealthy for humans to eat. So there'll still be heart disease and everything else. And then they can mix this cell-grown meat in with regular meat, and it'll be 100% meat product to boost and diversify their profits. So this is a bad idea. I think it's a really bad idea. That's going to harm the vegan movement enormously and harm animals in the long run. It's not, I don't think it'll do anything to reduce the number of animals being killed. It could actually, harm our movement. So the more I've looked into this, there's a good debate about this, which I think is helpful. I have that in the resources. And I just don't trust these alliances between the so-called animal welfare movement like Bruce Friedrich and the Good Food Institute and these huge corporations like ConAgra and Cargill and Tyson and Purdue and so forth. I think we need to stay on the side of ethical correctness here and go for the vegan ahimsa way of living, which is we don't need meat. We shouldn't be reinforcing the idea of animal flesh, humans eating animal flesh. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the other thing I was going to talk about was dairy. Angel, my good friend of ours, who's a Wolfie Type Facilitator, Angel Honig in Hawaii, had sent along this email. I was hoping to address it in our call, but it's just not time. But it was from a yoga teacher who talks about how it's not necessary, he says, first, it is not necessary to slaughter animals involved in dairy production. This is especially true when the dairy is run by compassionate people and not simply focused on profit. It's absolutely, this is wrong. And so it's a letter that's just full of complete misinformation, and also says that we need to eat certain, if yogis who are doing intense yoga need to eat dairy to get enough nutrients or something like that. So, wow, I mean, there's so many, but I think the point is not to argue, but to say I'm so glad I discovered that there's no nutritional needs for dairy, and also to talk about some of the things that I was going to talk about. I don't have time, but how the ahimsa milk that was attempted in West Virginia by the Hare Krishnas failed because you have to kill the cow. You can't just keep impregnating cows and feeding them. The population just gets astronomical, so it's impossible. Excuse me. So anyway, I'm going to stop here because I know it's time to move on, and I want to thank all of you. Excuse me. Wow, something is making me sneeze here. I want to thank all of you for joining us on the call and sharing your perspectives and your questions and your ideas. It's all very helpful. And I'm going to sneeze again. So looking forward to our call in 3 weeks, roughly on April 18th, Thursday, April 18th, the third Thursday of April. And thanks again for all the efforts that you're making to help raise awareness in our world. We'll close with saying our prayer that we say every day at noon. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And we'll close with a very short little piece of music, 58 seconds long. Here we go. Thank you all for joining. Thank you, everyone. Much love.